All right, Miss Poswa, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Brother Malote. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you, ma'am. I hope you're fine and your day's been good.
Yes, it has. Thank you very much.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us once again today. We are continuing talking about, the conversation on the long-term impact of divorce on children. And we'll continue today and with a focus today on social constructionism, which I believe would have come out of your research in this field. So tell us about social constructionism. What is it and what does it have to do with the divorce and its long-term effects on children?
Yes, Brother Malote, thank you so much for having me once again. Today we're talking about social constructionism. So the research study made use of social constructionism as a theoretical framework to which we understood the findings of the study. And today I just wanted to go through with you and the listeners in terms of what it is and why we chose to use it in the study, right, as well as how it benefited us in the study.
Okay.
So unlike mainstream psychology, where things are quite prescribed, mainstream psychology assumes that principles of psychological functioning are universal. If, for instance, I would ask you a question, I would assume that the answer that you give me is the same for all men, who are in a similar position as you,
mm-hmm,
which might not necessarily be the truth for all cases.
Correct.
Correct. Social constructionism, on the other hand, argues that reality is constructed between the knowledge that we share amongst each other, and that reality is socially constructed based on where we are coming from.
Okay. All right.
So this is the broad assumption of social constructionism. And I just wanted to take you through two very big facets of social constructionism and how it puts together what it assumes,
Okay. All right.
The first thing that social constructionism commonly understands is that the knowledge that we have, the categories, the concepts, the values that we develop are as a result of historically specific as well as culturally relative events in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
And what this means is that the experiences, when it comes to the historically specific, is that the experiences that we go through, they usually say that we are all a product of something,
Mm-hmm.
This means that the experiences that we go through, the things that we see, the things that are around us, they shape who we become.
Oh, yeah.
And if you think about this, you see that the views that we have about marriage are shaped by what we see marriage to be.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You see people, children or even adults that are coming from communities where there's 90% divorce. They become more accustomed to divorce. Divorce becomes normal in that community because socially divorce has become a norm.
I see.
Mm-hmm. So what we experience shapes our reality,
mm-hmm,
and the reality that we have is its foundation, it's found from historical specificity that we go through.
Mm-hmm.
And in terms of the cultural relativity,
mm-hmm,
it's that in our societies, think about even the Seventh-day Adventist society, where culturally divorce, we know it to be wrong,
Yes.
How in this community divorce is treated is different to a community that has become accustomed to divorce, So if, for instance, a specific culture, a specific society disapproves of a divorce, you find that the people that divorce or children that come from a divorced family in that background become isolated,
mm-hmm,
they are not supported. And this even creates their reality of divorce as being difficult,
mm-hmm,
knowing that when I go through divorce as a child, or rather if my parents go through divorce as a child, these are going to be my experiences because I'm in this specific society,
mm-hmm,
Mm-hmm. So social constructionism therefore allows us to be able to investigate the process that leads us to who we become individually and not universally, because individually we experience it differently based on what is around us.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So the construct and the concepts that we use to understand the world and the values and the principles that we develop are contributed a lot by the things historically that we go through, as well as culturally, what is relative to us. But more than that, social constructionism also asserts that knowledge goes hand in hand with social action. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. They say that knowledge grows. I don't know if knowledge grows or we grow in the knowledge that we have, but there's growth that goes with the knowledge, you know. Mm-hmm. But what social constructionism says is that knowledge and social action are intertwined. And if you think about the community, for instance, where they are strict, they don't support children or adults that have gone through divorce, you know, the knowledge there that divorce is wrong, it should not happen, and there is no room for understanding that in some circumstances divorce is actually necessary, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. and this is not to promote divorce, but it's to say we have individual and unique experiences, and as individuals we should be open to understanding the process so that we can be in a better position to support each other, mm-hmm. and to be there for each other for our own personal growth. So as we understand, yes, go ahead.
Yeah. I just wanted to check with you, Prudence, as you are alluding to this social constructionism. You know, a particular individual child, may live in two different socially constructed, environments. For instance, they may be having a particular community or society with the church, and they may have a particular community or society which is different, which is in their local communities. And then there's a schooling one. And you may discover that in certain instances, the constructionism between these three social settings is not the same. It's a mixed bag, which may then perhaps not point out to one singular outcome. How do you look at that? How did the study look at that, if at all?
So what we looked at in the study was what the process was for each individual. Mm-hmm. So for instance, we would ask, how are you dealing with it now? You know, and then we'd also ask, how did you deal with it then, looking at the process in between? Right. And we would find out that, for instance, there was one, we'll go through this in much detail next week as we do the findings, but there was one participant that said, you know, at school, there was a teacher that would always encourage me. You know, there was nothing at home that would help me to deal with what was happening. But at school, there was something that helped me to deal with it. And that, as a result, helped me to be able to achieve good results academically. Mm-hmm. Now I'm in university. I'm almost graduating, you know. Mm-hmm. So you can see that the different societies that we find ourselves in contribute differently to who we become ultimately. And, you know, the reality is that even as adults, everyone, you know, we function in different parts of, you are a father, you are a radio presenter, you know, you play different roles in the different functions of your life where you find yourself. And you will not experience socially the same things in each role,
True.
But for children, there should be a baseline and a level of consistency that we find in the different roles that they are, because this helps to build on to identity development. And I guess that's why even in the Adventist community, you know, we preach that there should be a consistency between school, church, and home, because the consistency and the foundation that is laid there is able to help children to transition in the different stages of development with ease.
Mm-hmm. You know, in these societies, I want to zoom into the subject of divorce. You may find that at school, for instance, the teachers, etc., are quite liberal about it, and they are preaching a message to the students, to the kids, that you know what, if the environment is not happy, better mom and dad just to separate, etc., etc. And then they go to church, and then they arrive at the church, and the messaging is different. And the message at a church setting would be, God hates divorce, it should not be done, etc., etc. Now you've got these two areas that this child lives in that are basically messaging different scenarios to the child. And I don't know. Are there instances like that?
Because a result of this is that children become indifferent, you know?
I see.
Because there's a person who I trust who is important to me at school, who is my teacher, who is saying X, you know?
Right.
But at home, my parents are important to me. I love them, but they are saying Y, you know? Mm-hmm. And children find themselves in a position where they are unable to commit to anything because there's different voices, both of maybe not equal, but both very important, mm-hmm. that are saying contradicting things about very important fundamental beliefs, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. And we find children then indifferent or unable to make decisions about their own life, to follow or not to follow certain paths in life.
So as a concept, social constructionism, does it, purport to be having a particular view from society in general, which is a singular view?
No. Social constructionism says that each person constructs their own reality and their own knowledge of how things happen.
Uh-huh.
And in the study, we wanted that to come out clearly, you know, because we wanted each participant to be able to tell us their own unique journey with parental divorce, how they experienced it individually and how it impacted them, you know, because when we get the different narratives of the different people in different contexts, we are able to then say, okay, if this should happen, it is better for parents to deal with it in this way.
Mm-hmm.
If
mm-hmm.
this then in this context should happen, it is better. So the recommendations become richer because we were able to look at it contextually in different processes that people or young adults in this case were able to process and go through.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The
point that I was making with the social, with the knowledge and social action is that mm-hmm. sometimes social action is necessary for us to reconstruct our knowledge, you know. Mm-hmm. So for instance, a situation where there's a strict forbidden, you know, and unsympathetic view to divorce, you know, mm-hmm. you find that people, especially in the church context, who go through divorce, stop going to church because of the strictness and the, you know, how people have become unsympathetic towards the idea of divorce, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Social action helps us to be able to better understand and to be able to be more supportive in situations where people are in need of our support. So social action and knowledge also then go to hand in hand according to social constructionism.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, you were about to say something.
Yeah, and I wanted to check. So this environment, social construction, the individual experiences, would they mm-hmm. then, because I understand that you spoke to them in early adulthood, would this consistently carry then from a childhood to adulthood, or there would be a breakage in terms of a different setting where a different social construction is perhaps practiced or preached?
So the breakage happens as the change in the environment comes through. What I found consistently was that when the divorce happened, all the participants that I interviewed experienced negative emotions, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But between then and in adulthood, there were some that were doing very well, you know,
mm-hmm.
that had very good relationships with their parents because there were changes that happened between the negative emotion as well as the functioning young adults that we see.
Mm-hmm.
But there were also some where they still remained emotionally in the place that they were when the divorce happened. Some that even deteriorated, you know, because there was no social action, there was nothing that happened between the event and where they were in their life today or at the time of the interview.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Quite interesting.
Well, I do know that next week you're going to be talking to us about the findings of that particular area. But I want us to conclude the conversation, and if you could just perhaps point out, the overall view on social constructionism and how the listeners should look at it, and the interventions that families, society, etc., could be approaching issues like this.
Yeah. So social constructionism is not necessarily a therapeutic modality, you know, but it was a modality that we used here to be able to understand the findings, you know, because it gave us an opportunity to look at questions that have been taken for granted in creating reality for young adults through the experiences of the divorce of their parents, you know, and it enabled us to be able to listen to each individual and unique perceptions of what formed the reality that you find yourself today, you know, and I think that it would be, even though some of the things that social constructionism maybe asserts might not have its foundations on Christianity, you know, but I do like about it that it is able to give us an understanding of the uniqueness and the individuality in the process, because the process determines our functioning in the end. And it is important for us to be able to or rather, the framework enabled us to be able to draw insightful knowledge in terms of the process so that we can be able to give recommendations that are appropriate to us managing to us managing how we develop or how we function, how we deal with the divorce. You remember last week we spoke about the stages of development,
yes,
you know?
Yes, yes.
The stages of development, if you look at them broadly, you could see that they are universal, you know? Children go through this, they must build trust. After that, they must build autonomy. After that, you know, it's very universal. There's no, we don't look at children individually, you know. And if we were to stop at just looking at the stages of development and not looking at how society impacts how we develop, we might conclude that all children who go through divorce do not function well as a result, you know. And that might stop us from doing interventions, from doing things that will mitigate the negative impact so that children develop well and they reach their developmental milestones and they succeed and they thrive, even if parents have divorced.
Interesting conversation. Well, Prudence Poswa, we thank you so much for coming through this afternoon. I'm looking forward to actually next week this time, where we shall be listening to some of sharing some of the results and findings in this particular area. But for today, Prudence, I do want to thank you so much. And those who are listening, Prudence Poswa is joining us. She is a counseling psychologist in the area of Johannesburg. Thank you so much, ma'am.
Thank you so much, Puji. Have a lovely evening.
Thank you so much. Have a good one.
Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.